The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Stocks breaking out as tech mania continues. Apple finally announces AI and investors love it. CPI comes in, yields drop. It's the Goldilocks all over again. And our guest this week is Steve Sanders, EVP at Interactive Brokers. All this and much more on episode number 873 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, what fun aren't we having a good time at this whole thing? I mean, bad news is good news, and good news is good news. And that's what we call Goldilocks circumstances. That's what we call a situation when we see that no matter what, there's an opportunity for the markets to go up. And boy, have they been going up. I mean, it's amazing to watch on a daily basis how every dip is bought. And what we're seeing right now is a circumstance that you don't really see that often. What you see is, you know, times where you have corrections in the markets that are deep and sometimes a little more shallow. You have situations when you see rallies, but right now we're in one of those really mega rally moments that's pretty interesting. Now, that could end at any time, and okay, that's what it is. But right now, what we saw was the jobs report showed a big gain in employment last week, the week before, and at the same time, the unemployment rate moved to 4%. But a surprise CPI that came in lower than expected really hit the spot. I mean, that was just the icing on the cake. We saw a widespread rally in that print. In fact, I remember looking Wednesday, midday, right up until the point when Powell started speaking. But right about then, advancers outpaced losers by about 8-1. And that's much different than we saw at the start of the week. Even though there was a general move higher for the S&P 500 earlier in the week, the advanced decline line was really messy. Decliners outpaced advancers by an enormous range. And that was interesting because the equal weighted S&P, when I was looking at it, was negative. And that was when the S&P, the market cap weighted, the usual one that we look at all the time, was actually positive. And what that showed me was that the move was really narrowly focused on the mega caps, all the names we've been talking about ad nauseum for a long period of time, and that we're all happy that we own, of course. But the bottom line is when we look at this as a market right now of stocks, it's really focused in on a few names only. And that trade of the mega caps, of the weighted average of the market cap and the biggest of the bigs has been working. That trade has been working all year. In fact, it was finally this week that we saw that Apple is up for the year now by about, what, 12%? When it was flat coming into this week. Into this week, Apple was flat for the year. And everybody's like, what's going on? Even with a okay earnings report, not great, but with a buyback that was like, what, $110 billion, that was pretty good. The earnings report was okay, but what really enticed investors was that finally Apple came out with some conversation related to their AI. AI, in their case, is called Apple Intelligence, which I'm having a little bit of a hard time wrapping my mind and my arms around about how this is such a big thing and how it's going to actually work. And it's going to take me probably some time to understand this, and I'm digging in. But there are some interesting components of it. We know that Apple has a huge buyback program going on. That's interesting. We know that Apple has opportunity to invest in itself with plenty of money on its balance sheet. That's interesting. We know they need to be in this AI game because they just do. And whether Siri is going to be AI enabled or linked up with ChatGPT through OpenAI, I don't know. It seems to be very thin on what the information that we got during the Worldwide Developers Conference. There was some. But still, how is this actually going to work? How is privacy going to be protected? What is going on here, right? that's something that we really going to have to wait some time until they come out with this. It's going to be a while. Some of the bulls in the Apple side of things have called for the fact that a massive upgrade cycle is going to begin, because if you have an iPhone 12, maybe the compute power is not there. You need to get up to the next level so you can have the Siri or the AI-enabled Siri really do its thing. That's what they're banking on right now. So that's something to think about, and that's what's been going on in the market. I have a lot to talk about with our next guest, and I want to bring him on. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Steve Sanders, he's the EVP of Marketing and Product Development, Interactive Brokers. You know we love Interactive Brokers. In his capacity, he oversees all marketing and product development efforts at the company and introduces Interactive Brokers. He did this, was the low commissions, the advanced trading technology, and a whole bunch of other products. And there's a few in particular that I want to talk about that today, because I've been nosing around some of the things that just came out with. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. And I thought maybe we could have him get to that. But I have some other things to talk to him about also as well, because he has his finger on the pulse of the industry. So I think this is going to be an interesting discussion. And our guest today is Steve Sanders. He's Executive VP of Marketing and Product Development at Interactive Brokers, also known as IBKR, as we call it. In his capacity, oversees all, and I mean all, the marketing and product development efforts at the company, and introduces Interactive Brokers, low commissions, advanced trading technology, and all sorts of products. In fact, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to him today was because, as you know, I use Interactive Brokers for our client portfolios for the managed growth strategy. And there was a bunch of new initiatives they rolled out, and I thought I'd just go right to the guy and ask him about it, make it easier. Steve, how are you?
I am fine. Thank you for having me back, Andrew.
You've been busy, huh? You've been really busy at Interactive Brokers with, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on.
Yes, there's always a whole bunch of stuff going on.
You don't just sit around and just say, everything's fine, we'll just leave it as is, huh?
No, we're an engineering company that happens to be in the broker business. So the engineers are always trying to find new ways to bring more accessibility to our clients, more trading tools. We're always at work.
You know what's interesting? This is an aside, just as a point, though. I just noticed this today, actually. One of the things that's really interesting about your updates are like small. They don't, you know, sometimes updates that come across on other systems that we have, you know, just whatever it may be, just take forever. Yours are like these little bitty, hey, we're doing an update. Thank you. Okay, done. That's awesome.
Well, yeah, there are two ways of doing business. Before I got here, I was with a bank I won't name for 15 years. And generally, they were of the mind that they'd do these big projects that would take 3 years, thoroughly test. And by the time they got their updates out to market, it was either too late or senior management got tired of the project, so it just never got completed.
Right.
Here, we tend to roll things out, and we have our beta releases, and sometimes they're launched before their time, but we're constantly rolling out little things and getting feedback from our clients and building on that. And I think it's a much better way of doing things, mm-hmm. because, you know, not necessarily everything that you launch is going to be accepted by your clients. And this is a good way to market test it also at the same time.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, if we can, and I want to get into some of the new initiatives, but retail investors, the markets, meme stocks are coming back all of a sudden. But not really. But a lot of people are saying, well, it's not really the retail trader as much. Now, I know you have you're on the pulse of all this. You can tell kind of, you know, where the flows, generally speaking. Are the retail traders coming back to levels they were back in, let's say, the high? And when I say retail traders, you know, I'm not talking about this, the average. I'm talking about the quick snap day traders looking at these kinds of crazy moves that we saw back in 2021. Are they back, or are they kind of never left, or they're just really indiscernible?
Well, you know, there's always two sides of this. Whoever can find a way to make money is going to make money.
Right.
And certainly, you know, there were retail investors back in 2001, but there were also institutions trying to figure out how to make money, you know, from the craze and get out at the right time. So, you know, I think it was a mix back then of institutional and retail. And I think the same today.
You know, it's funny. You remind me of something when people are like, no, I never trade GameStop. I'm like, why not? It's rigged. It moves all around. It's bad. I'm like, wait. If you're a trader, what's the difference? And if you want to trade, and even if you're an investor and you want to trade a little bit, why? Well, because it's, you know, it could be rigged. And my answer to them is this. If you and I went to Vegas, Steve, if you and I went to Vegas and I told you that slot machine over there is rigged and it's rigged to benefit the user, not the house. And you say to me, no, I don't want to use that machine. I'm like, why? It's rigged. It could benefit you. You know, that's the same kind of thinking, right? It's like, I'm not going to do it.
Right. Well, you know, the first thing I probably learned in this business is volatility. Any kind of volatility is good for the business, uh-huh. Right?
Yep.
Now, I'm not smart enough to be able to time it and, you know, figure out when to get in and out. But it's only at times of volatility that you have the opportunity to make money. And if you have a good strategy and you can figure it out, then I say go for it. But yeah. Certainly I'm not giving any advice on exactly how that's done.
Yep. Now, one of the things that we've talked about, and it was a big issue, really, really big issue in the brokerage community for a while, it really caused a lot of shimmers for some companies, was interest on cash. You know, the idea that a lot of these brokers had you in a cash sweep account, which was code for cash we don't pay you any money on account. And then what happened was, as interest rates went up, a funny thing happened. What happened was all of a sudden this money that was being, I would say, not paid and saved and made on your money market was all of a sudden disappearing from many firms because people were opting, and they called it like cash sifting or something like that, where they were moving from, hey, I don't want to be in this money market that's paying me nothing. Let me move into this money market that's paying me 3%, 4%, 5%. And that caused a big ripple in the industry, right? Because all of a sudden that happened. I think I asked you the question back then, why would people opt to stay in the cash sweep then go into a money market? And I think your answer was something like, because they don't know. They don't know. And the broker is not going to tell them. Now, on the other hand, you guys have been paying cash on your free, you know, the easily accessible cash balances, the sweep. You've been paying money on the sweep, essentially, right? What's going on in the industry with that? And any thoughts on what the future will hold?
Well, I would say, you know, just to elaborate on our past conversation, that most banks and brokers are looking for clients who are too busy to pay attention. So as an example, I was just having a heated discussion with a bank I happened to have a CD with, who automatically renewed my CD.
Oh, they do that.
Without any kind of notice.
Uh-huh.
And then when I, you know, they send me an email saying it's been renewed. And when I told them I didn't agree to this, they wanted to charge me an early penalty fee.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly the same thing goes on in the broker industry, where if you just leave your money there and you're too lazy to take some sort of action, they're going to ding you for it. And this happens over and over again. We try to be very transparent about it. We don't have sweep accounts. We pay the interest in our broker account, and we advertise what that interest is going to be. It's floating to Fed funds at any given time. So, you know, that's what we try to do, the honest and right thing. But certainly I will say, for many banks and brokers, you know, it's an easy way to make money when you know, you do things when the clients aren't paying attention.
Yeah. And unfortunately, clients don't pay attention. I have clients also like, hey, you know, how are things going? I'm like, have you looked at your statements lately? Well, I leave it to you. I'm like, what? You should be looking at your statements. You know, you should look at what's going on so that you just generally know what's happening. But kind of interesting. The other thing that is now an older item that we've talked about in the past and I've talked about is the differential between, I don't know what you want to call it, but we'll call it free trades versus paid trades. Free trades, I mean, you know, where you're paying nothing because there's a backflow payment from the market makers giving you that opportunity, and people just can buy and sell stocks all day without any commission, versus the paid commission, which you're paying a small amount. Have they become, is there any major changes going on with that?
As a matter of fact.
Oh, this is something I don't know. Hello.
I just read that Fidelity is pushing back on the ETF providers and basically telling them, if you don't give us a payment for offering your ETFs, we're going to remove them from our platform. So certainly, this was no surprise to me. I mean, you know, nothing is for free, and the brokers have to make money in some way, right? So, you know, this is just another way, you know, payment for order flow is one way.
Well, the payment for order flow was all predicated on the fact that instead of getting a commission per trade, there'll be behind the scenes payment for order flow from Citadel and all these other guys that are coming back to you that hopefully will make the same amount of money, but it would also generate more trades. This is my thinking, at least, because it was free. The problem with ETFs is you may buy something and hold it forever, and there's no payment coming.
That is very true. But if you're offering ETFs, you know, for free, the broker loses that commission, and the broker isn't in the charity business. So some way, right, over the years, right now, lots of brokers are making money off of interest because, interest has gone up, and you know, they can take a wider spread. If that kind of goes away and interest rates drop, these brokers are going to be looking to make up the revenue. And certainly things like charging the ETF providers or squeezing out more payment for order flow are ways to keep, you know, the P&L at the same levels that they were.
I could tell you just something that's interesting on this that happened very recently. There is a broker, I won't use the broker's name. Let's just call him Chuck, for example, okay?
Okay.
As an example. A call was made because we were checking on what would be the contingent deferred sales charge, it was the early penalty for withdrawing of a mutual fund, usually a 60-day hold, or you got to pay, I don't know, $40 or something like that, right, for the sale. So we call up because we're like, you know, we think this particular one may have a short-term redemption fee on it. And we call up this fictitious broker named Chuck and we say, hey, what is the fee? And they say, oh, zero. We say, wait a second. This one we know we've used before and the client is changing something, needs some money, and it's the only place to get money from. And this in the past has had a short-term redemption fee. Oh, yes, that's true. That's what they said. So the broker said, well, you know, as of this week, we've taken off all the short-term redemption fees on mutual funds. I said, you're kidding me. I said, that would be nice to know because that is a big part of our planning process, you know, of looking at making sure there's no fees and low cost, right? I said, are you going to send something out? You know what they said? No.
No.
I said, what do you mean? Well, we don't want everybody between us. We don't want everybody knowing that this is the case. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? So they eventually did send, I think, maybe something. But I think that a lot of people in the dark about this.
Yeah, but why did they do it? Was it out of the goodness of their heart?
I would think that it was because people were probably not putting money into those funds and they squozed the funds. Squeezed. I don't know. I'm speculating. I have no idea. You know, maybe people opting for, I don't know. I don't know the reason. But I thought it was always stupid that they had those short-term redemption fees. Maybe they did it under the guise of not them. When I say them, every one of these firms, right? Did under the guise of, well, it's hard for the manager of the fund to invest properly if you keep on moving money in and out.
Right.
But there's some truth to that.
And certainly the hedge funds do.
Yeah. So, I don't know, something interesting to note, right in line with what you're saying.
We tend to not offer those kinds of funds with those redemption fees and other fees because we, you know, they're all hidden and, you know, that's not the kind of thing we like to do.
Yeah. So I gotta ask this question. Two questions. One, curiosity. Do you track how many people are using apps versus web?
Well, it's certainly grown over the years. I think that, you know, the last time I looked, you know, and this isn't, you know, it's not volumes, because volumes generally for us come through our APIs, right? Mm-hmm, somebody's doing a lot of trading, they have a programmatic solution. So, you know, in terms of accounts, I think about 50% of the accounts are using some kind of mobile app at this point, and it's certainly grown.
Yeah.
But that answer isn't weighted towards number of trades.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, when it comes to mobile versus web, the way I look at it is this: if you can get like an Amazon-like experience, you know, that like click, 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 done, thank you, versus, you know, very difficult, and then it's smaller to read, and there's little things you don't know where things are. It's really a distraction. So that's the nirvana, I get point, right? Where you can get to that level?
Yeah. Well, you know, for me personally, if I want to do a lot of thinking and really use the tools, you know, in spite of all the, you know, advances in our mobile apps and making them easy, I'm going to do that on the desktop. When I look to the mobile app, to, you know, I have to sell out of something quickly, or I want to buy into something quickly, a trade here or there. But I would say, since, you know, the majority of our clients tend to be more professional, they want a big screen and they want all the tools accessible right there. Yeah. Although we certainly have made major inroads to try to include that in our mobile apps, there's just limited real estate.
Mm-hmm. So I guess we got to get to the point of the discussion where I bring up the two letters that everybody's talking about, and it's AI.
Yes.
So what, if anything, of interest has that been with regard to what you know about in brokerage in general, right, the concept, and what are you guys doing?
So we are playing with AI, you know, in every area, right? And I think it's going to be more evolutionary than revolutionary. So, you know, in every area, in customer service, you know, getting the right answers to our clients, marketing, being able to better find the right channels, trading tools, being able to have predictive models. But I just don't think any of this, you know, is going to be the breakthrough announcement that's going to change the world in a day. I think it's gradually going to change over time. Some things are going to work very well, and, you know, we'll double down on the investment there. And some things are going to be failures and not work at all.
Yeah, so, it's interesting because I think a lot of people believe that this is, you put it really well, evolutionary, not revolutionary. It may be revolutionary, but it's going to take a while to get to the point. And I think a lot of people are really like, hey, we got AI. Okay, good. You're going to make money on it right now. Whereas it needs to be cooked a little bit.
Right. AI has been around for a long time. I mean, back in the early 90s, I was playing with it, you know, for the bank I was working for in credit cards to predict losses. And at the time, it did no better than the older tools. And the issue was that the hardware wasn't there to collect all the data and train it. And that certainly has improved with time. But again, you know, whether it's a neural network or AI or whatever.
I remember the neural networks. There was a bunch of software that was for trading with neural networks. I remember that. That was back in, you're right, that was back in the 90s. Yeah.
Right. And I played with it. But the, you know, the point is that, you know, it's only as good as the hardware and the data that you're going to train your neural network or AI on. So as I said, I think there'll continue to be advances. I just don't think it's going to be revolutionary.
Yeah. One of the big things that happened recently in terms of the markets was a change to settlement. We saw, we went from way back, what was it? It usually was T plus five. Was it T plus five way back?
I remember T, you know, I remember the T plus three, but I think you're right.
I think it was T plus five. Yeah, I'm showing my age. T plus five, and then it was T plus three, which is really pretty much, you know, one more, you know, the trading day plus. What this means is, by the way, well, why don't you explain it to everybody first? What is the settlement date discussion?
Well, the way that settlement works is that make the trade today. And then the back office has to exchange the shares that you bought or the ETF you bought for actual cash. So that generally happens in batch. For instance, you know, for Microsoft, you know, we don't settle up every Microsoft share. We take all the Microsoft shares from all our clients and net them out, and you know, maybe we're net positive 1,000, so we bring in 1,000 shares, and then we net all the payments, and whatever that payment is, we send it off to the clearing agency 3 days later.
So you basically had three. Now you had to come up with it. I remember back when it was T plus three, whatever, you'd do a trade and it's like you sell it the next day, and you're like, oh, I hope to make money, and people would be like, what if you don't? Well, you still got to pay for it. But now we're T plus one. How did that, was that painful?
Not for us, because, you know, we're all electronic. You know, the rumor I heard on the street is for others with these old mainframe batch systems, there was a lot of coding that needed to be done. And so it took a few years to get this done. But for us, it was pretty simple.
Yeah. Some people were talking about, oh, there's the brokerage's Y2K moment. You know, they're not going to be able to program it and make this happen. But so far, not a problem with delivery, I'm assuming that. And treasuries were always like this.
Yeah, and futures. Right. I mean, we've been doing that with futures for many years. So it didn't really matter for us. I mean, the plus about this is as you move in the settlement date, there's less risk, right? Mm-hmm. The broker going bad and everything gets settled up when you have to wait for 3 days. I mean, there's always that risk that broker can't show up with the money that it owes.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Counterparty risk that we had during the Lehman days.
That's absolutely
nobody,
correct.
Nobody would take the trades from Lehman because they knew, wait a minute, how is that going to work?
Exactly right. Now the negative of it, I mean, T plus one is good, but as you get to, let's say, real time, and you know, we could certainly do it. But it means, you know, there's just going to be more transactions, right? So more wire settlements that would happen, you know, during the day if you wanted to continuously settle this versus just doing it once a day.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that's happened recently is, so we know that the stock, well, there was some change in the futures markets. Futures used to be closed. So they opened at, I believe it was 6 p.m. on Sunday evening, if I'm not mistaken, for the E-minis and for the equity and for most futures. And they would close on Friday at, was it also 6 o'clock, I think?
I think it's 6.
Six.
I think you're right.
And then there was a little weird, I don't even know why, little lunch break of the 4 o'clock to the 4:15 that futures were dead. Remember that?
Yep.
And then it was kind of a weird opening that really didn't count or something until like 5 o'clock that night or something. It was a strange thing.
Which had to do with the settlement.
Right.
Because the settlement cycle closed at 4 p.m.
Right. But that changed. That 4 to 4:15 doesn't even, you still trade right through it.
Right.
There's no longer that break.
You still can, but again, settlement still ends at 4 p.m. if I'm not mistaken.
So now we have another addition So in the old days, if you wanted to trade and you want to deal with stuff like there's a war breaking out, what the hell do I do at 3 in the morning when I rolled over and see this, all this, I can hit the futures and I can run up, yep. Buy some gold. I could short some SPOOs or the S&P futures or whatever I felt like doing, right? Nikkei futures, whatever. But that was it. That was the only way to play it, right? And that's fine if you want to do that. But what if you're not a futures trader? There's plenty of people that are not futures traders out there. You know, they just don't want to do it. They want to be regular old ETFs / stocks, et cetera. Well, now all of a sudden, when I say all of a sudden, recently, I should say, we have overnight trading. Tell us about that.
So overnight trading has been tried, a number of times over the years. It's not like it's new. And the issue that, investors and traders always face is the liquidity. I mean, I'll ask you the question, how many friends do you have that are up at 2 a.m. in the morning trading away?
No, I get it. Not many.
You know, most people are sleeping at that time. What's very different, at least for us this time, is that 85% of our new accounts come from outside the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly, with the different time zones, there are plenty of people sitting in Hong Kong or let's say Germany who, want to trade during their regular trading hours. And so we have been, we introduced this overnight trading with stocks, maybe about a year ago. And we've just seen an increase, month after month. If we were only a U.S. broker, I would say maybe it doesn't have as much a chance, but given that we have clients all around the world, as I said, the signs are looking positive at this point that the liquidity continues to build.
Right. And you just change up where the trade execution for the day, the current day, is up to 8 p.m., right?
Yeah, so we're on that. I forgot whether it's 8 p.m. or not, but whenever that, daily settlement cycle closes, the trades after that go to the next day.
Mm. I mean, I think that's a kind of interesting thing, especially if people want to trade. For example, people want to trade, I don't know if this is the case with you, but Bitcoin, but don't want to be in Bitcoin, right? So you got the technically, you can still trade 24 hours to a point in the ETFs. Not in the cash market, I'm saying, if that's what you want to do. The same thing is if you don't want to be in futures. Well, you could do the SPY, which is very, very liquid. But again, as you alluded to, the liquidity is not really that good. I don't know if spreads blow out late night. You just got to watch and make sure you do limit orders instead of you probably don't even take market orders after the night, right?
Right. So that is exactly right. You got to watch the spreads because that's a good indication of the liquidity. How wide are the spreads?
Yeah. I mean, some people get like hung up. Oh, I know plenty of people are like, hey, I'm going to buy that, right at the bid. I'm like, okay, well, the spread's 25 cents. Let's say it's a wide. You really want that? Who really cares about the extra 3 cents that you could probably pick it up for, right? But I'm waiting. Then what ends up happening is they miss it. But point is, don't ever try to be too greedy on either side of the trade.
That's right. And look, you can put in a limit order that you think is a reasonable price and leave it in there. And if somebody picks it up, they pick it up during the night. And if they don't, then, you just go in there during regular trading hours.
Mm-hmm. And what about the... But it's not only on stocks. There's also extended trading for treasuries, for U.S. treasuries, right?
Yes. In the secondary market, we just introduced that. I will say that treasuries tend to be, or any fixed income tends to be a much slower market. So, yeah, for a lot of them, it could be days before the bid ask changes on these secondary offerings because there's there's so many of them and the liquidity isn't the same.
But is this something that you like had clients like, hey, we really need treasuries overnight?
Well, we have clients that are sitting in Hong Kong and other jurisdictions that it's their regular trading hours and they want to come in and they want to buy treasuries.
Yeah.
So it's not the guy who's sitting there at 2 a.m. in the morning that would benefit in the U.S. that would benefit from this.
You're talking about the guy that can't sleep, that's watching QVC on one hand and has an IB desktop on the other?
That's exactly right. That guy.
I made money. I could buy more stuff on QVC.
Right.
So now bonds are trading at 22 hours a day. That's interesting because it's a liquid market. It's deep. Treasury market's deep.
Yeah, treasuries are pretty deep, but yeah, they absolutely are.
Mm. So, and actually could margin a lot more with treasuries too.
That's correct.
Now, what's your current margin rate?
Well, it's called a haircut in the fixed income world. And I have to go look. I mean, maybe
I want to say it's 5.83 or something like that.
Yeah, I think so, maybe.
But it's interesting because you leverage up you still get to take a little bit of a haircut. You know, you get a 5% 3 month and you're leveraging up, you'll lose, you know, if that's the case, 83 base points per time you do it. Every leverage point. The thing that's really cool that I've been looking at and that I know that you put a lot of work in, because this is something that you and I have talked about, and it's actually, I think, if I'm not mistaken, just a couple of days ago, this was just announced and available for advisors, is the retirement planner.
Yes.
Through the portfolio analyst, right?
That's correct. So the portfolio analyst is our tool for consolidating all your broker accounts and bank accounts and providing very advanced analysis on your portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And over the past year, we've been working on planning tools, various different goals by assets. And the retirement planner is something that we added at the beginning of the year for individuals, so that you can basically go in there and put in all your assumptions. Well, it automatically knows what you have in your investment and bank accounts right now. And it asks you to make a bunch of assumptions on how long you're going to live and what kind of, you know, if you want to change the return on some of the asset classes and, you know, do you have a wife, and you pump all those assumptions in. And it's basically a cash flow that tells you, will you have enough cash to be able to live into retirement? So, as I said, we introduced this at the beginning of the year, but what we introduced this week was the ability for both advisors and brokers to be able to create plans for their clients, multiple different plans, and to be able to share it with them.
So, first question, in terms of linking up the various accounts that you have outside of Interactive Brokers, I'm assuming you're using something like a Plaid or some other.
Yeah,
link.
We actually use Fiserv.
Okay.
But it's, you know, Plaid similar.
Basically what you do is, I mean, if it's similar, I could tell you what happens with Plaid. For those of you who don't know, you go in and you have an account and you go into this area and you say, okay, add account. What account do you want to add? And basically what this is it's like a Zapier, right? Where it connects something. Basically you say, okay, I want to add my Bank of America account or my Wells Fargo account, or I want to add my Fidelity account or whatever it is. And you basically give the credentials in a secure manner to this intermediary that then will link the account to your account at Interactive Brokers. Well, not link it to that, but through the portfolio analyst, et cetera, so that you can see what's going on.
That's correct. The username and password is encrypted. It's very much like also what Quicken does or has been doing for many, many years.
Linking with the bank.
And a number of places do this, but where we really shine is with our advanced analytics for investments. I think we really do it better than anybody.
Why is that?
Well, there are certain little things. I mean, you own a bunch of ETFs and mutual funds, right? Mm-hmm. You probably own stock, you know, individually mm-hmm. in some of your portfolio. So right. Do you know what percentage of your portfolio is Apple? when you put together all the ETFs, mutual funds, right, and individual stocks.
And the reason why that's important is to understand that you don't want to have, if you're trying to diversify a portfolio correctly, you don't want to have all this overlap, as we call it. You know, and what Steve is saying is, and I'll answer the question for you, is, well, most people don't. You own the SPY. Okay, great. You own the, I'm just picking on a few things out of the blue here. The Growth Fund of the America Mutual Fund. And you own the Large Cap Tech Fund. Well, now you got 4% Apple in the SPY. You got, you know, 5% in XLK. And then in whatever else I just mentioned, you may have another 4%. Well, that may be, and if that's everything in your portfolio, that means you have 4% of Apple in your portfolio, if that's what we're looking at. Now, you may own Apple also, right? And that adds to the point. You're like, no, I don't have much Apple. I just have these shares. Well, nah, not really. Everybody's got Apple and the ETFs and mutual funds.
And that's exactly right. I mean, other examples include our attribution report, where you can take your portfolio and compare it to an index. And it basically tells you why your return is different than the index. Let's say the S&P 500, which could be different because you put more into certain industries, or it could be because your industry buckets are just earning lower returns than the industry bucket for, let's say, the S&P 500. So it kind of explains to you why your return is better or worse. Another example, we provide lots of risk reports on the Greeks. And
by the way, he's not talking. We got to reel you back. Yeah. He's not talking about the islands. He's not talking about Corfu. He's not talking about Santorini. Why don't you tell us what that means? The Greeks.
The Greeks, yes, the option Greeks. Yeah. So, yes, I'm talking about Delta and Gamma. All the things that option traders generally look at, right?
Right.
So when options, you know, the price moves, you know, how does it move with the underlying stock or the time or a bunch of other things that, you know, option traders generally look at. And the other one I was going to mention is VAR, which is value at risk, which basically is an indication of, you know, if the markets move this way or that way, how much could you potentially lose?
Right. So I just want to clear it up because I didn't want them thinking it was like, you know, gyros and grape leaves that you were talking about.
No, absolutely not.
So but what's interesting is this is a freebie. You're not like, this is not a bolt-on add-on that you charge for.
That's right.
Like anybody that has an account with you.
Right.
Have all these systems.
That's right. And for an advisor, it's even more valuable because, you know, an individual can go out and get Quicken, and I happen to like Quicken. I don't know if it has the same advanced investment features, not to pick on them, but I think it's a good product. But this is even more important for advisors because with advisors, they tend to pay for some pretty high priced, you know, portfolio management systems that can run up to $300,000 a year to use it for all their clients. So we just give this to our advisors for free.
Hmm. Yep. I'm one of those.
Yeah.
I'm one of those that pay.
It's yours, it's free.
Yeah. No, but I'm also one of those that pays a lot of money too. So there
right.
you go.
Oh, you are paying. Well, maybe you want to see, you know, what we have to offer here. Maybe you don't want to pay a lot of money anymore.
We know. You can have.
And please send me your feedback on it.
Absolutely.
We did a good job on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really important that people, we always talk about on this show, we for forever talked about financial security, financial independence, the opportunity to have a life that you don't have to worry about. Well, everybody worries about money. Let's be honest. I don't care who you are. You're worrying about money. It's just a different, you know, different zeros and decimal points, right? But you're worrying about money. But what's interesting is that not a lot of people have access to modeling of what could be. Now, those models, by the way, in my opinion, are only as good as what you put into them, the assumptions. and what the what your reality is of what your and expectations, right? You could do this great deal and make it look really great, but you're like, wait, well, let me get this straight. You're thinking you're only going to need $20 a week to live when you're 80 years old? I don't think so. Let's change this to a reality function, inclusive of probably what you have also, which is an inflation-adjusted future values that can, you know, give me the real numbers that I need. And, you know, that's I think that's a really interesting tool that some people maybe have not used, but also didn't know where to get it.
Well, there have certainly been planning tools that have been out there for a number of years. And I would say a lot of them aren't, you know, very intuitive, or they require a lot of work to gather together that plan.
Mm-hmm.
What we tried to do was to make it as simple and intuitive as possible. So, you know, we'll put some basic assumptions in there. You can change them around a little bit and see how the graph moves over your life. But, you know, it, just to get into it and start to try it, we just wanted to make it simple and intuitive.
Yep.
So a lot of work wasn't required to look at your first plan.
The other thing is Global Analyst. The Global Analyst is a product that can be used, it's, again, advisors or individuals, to take a look at really your portfolio too, right? You know, like kind of how it is, and also to search for things that maybe fit certain criteria. Like I want to find, I don't know, pharmaceutical firms in India. As an example, I don't know,
right. Just
throwing this out there. Or maybe I want to find, you know, restaurants that are specifically in Asian countries. I don't know, again, whatever you want.
Yep.
And that's the World Data Screen is a new piece, right?
Yep. So we had our Global Analyst, which essentially allowed you to search for stocks and ETFs around the world and, you know, look at them and compare them. And we recently added our map screener that takes fundamentals, and it's in a graphical kind of format. And, you know, you put in your fundamental criteria and it tells you where in the world you can find these particular stocks or ETFs.
Which is helpful because a lot of data, let's put it this way. Yahoo Finance isn't going to give you this information, folks.
Well, I think there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of providers like Yahoo that do a very good job on the U.S., you know.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Unfortunately, as you and I know, you know, the number of stocks in the U.S., you know, has dwindled over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's moved into private equity and other areas. So there's just not as much to choose from.
Well, there's only five stocks anyway, right? Isn't there just five? I mean, Apple.
Right. I had read something like that. Yeah. So this just gives, you know, viewers the ability to look at the whole world, wherever the stock is, and just increases, you know, potential investment opportunities that you can get into. And I think that's where, you know, other services don't provide as much. We've always been extremely, you know, globally driven. So that's what we do.
That's great. That's unbelievable. Well, I got to tell you something. Seriously, we get together about quarterly, you and I, something like that. And I think this quarter probably has the most rollouts that I remember. Am I wrong? This year, let's say this year.
Well, we've certainly had a lot of launches, you know, in this quarter and last quarter. I would say that we've had a good number of launches, you know, especially the desktop. That was a big one. And the retirement tools, those were big ones, and all the other things we discussed. Yeah, I would say this is a pretty good quarter for us.
You don't slow down. You don't know. Grass is not growing under your feet, sir.
Well, we still continue to work these things. We don't pre-announce, but there are some exciting things to come.
Oh, good. Well, then I will find out more the next time we chat. How's that?
Absolutely.
Steve Sanders, EVP of Interactive Brokers. Thank you so much for sharing all this, taking the time, because I think there's a lot of great stuff out there that you really bring to our attention and very usable by a lot of people. So thanks so much.
Great. Thank you, Andrew. Thanks. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. And that's going to wrap it up for another edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. So much information there. And you know what? You could use a lot of that, which is really great. Thank you so much for joining me this week and every week. I'll see you again real soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.